Book Conclusion. My favorite professor in college was Dr. Needham. I took every course he offered, was his teaching assistant for his experimental psychology class, asked him to be my college advisor, and even took an independent study with him in cognitive psychology. All this meant that I spent many hours in his office, chatting, listening, asking, and staring at his walls as he tended to other students too. Covering his office walls were beautiful photographs of orange and pink colored canyons in Arizona, shelves of books I wish I had the time to read, framed diplomas, and handwritten post-it notes on cork boards that I could barely make out. But what received the most of my attention was an old poster of a cute cartoon monster in a library, with half-eaten books strewn all around it, and the Francis Bacon quote, "Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed up and digested." Initially, I was amused that such a distinguished man could adorn his office walls with something so, well, adorable. Something you would imagine finding in an elementary school reading nook, not a psychology professor's office. But as my college years passed and I spent more and more time in Dr. Needham's office, I came to appreciate the genuine wisdom of that poster. As someone who rarely finishes books, this quote gave me permission to not judge myself so harshly, since the books I never finished might just have been for the tasting. I was liberated to dabble in the ideas that caught my attention and not force myself to read what didn't hold my interest. As semesters came to an end and I found myself cramming for exams, I better understood how books that were swallowed too quickly often caused mental indigestion, or the information was quickly forgotten after it was mindlessly regurgitated onto a test. As I came to the end of my senior year, I had a much greater appreciation for what it really means to learn something, to internalize a field of study, or to say that I've acquired any semblance of knowledge or expertise on a topic. For me, it meant reading something not once or twice, but usually many times over before it was thoroughly chewed and digested. Years later, when I received my offer to write my first book, I took a walk to my favorite bookstore in Boulder, Colorado, to contemplate whether I would accept the offer. As I walked to the bookstore, I wondered what it would be like to see my own name on one of these shelves. But as I paused and stood among the hundreds and hundreds of books, I started to feel completely overwhelmed as various parts of myself began raising their voice in protest. My insecure parts screamed in fear, claiming I would have nothing of value to offer the world. I was assailed by my critical part, who adamantly reminded me how I was dyslexic and couldn't even write a book if I wanted to. An apathetic and defeated part looked around at all the books already on the shelves, questioning whether or not the world needs any more freaking books. Thankfully, a wiser inner part chimed in and reminded me of that lovable book-eating monster on Dr. Needham's wall. If I wrote something that was tasted and swallowed by some, that would be amazing. And if I wrote something that was actually worth chewing and digesting to even just a few, it would be worth it. In this book, we focused on the power of paradigms to shape our reality, in particular, our relational world. Specifically, we examined some of the key differences between monogamous and non-monogamous paradigms, and the importance of recognizing that many relational challenges within CNM are related to the lingering influence of monogamy, along with its central archetype, the couple. We also saw how grounding your focus on the concept of paradigms can support you in troubleshooting your resistance to either making the transition to CNM or successfully navigating a significant change in pre-existing CNM relationships. We explored how certain cracks in the foundation of your existing relationships could get exposed in the context of CNM, or make the dynamics of current relationships seem even harder. We introduced Dave's important work with restorative relationship conversations and learned that a fundamental paradigm shift is needed, not just from monogamy to non-monogamy, but also from an adversarial to a restorative approach in the context of our interpersonal conflict. He also gave us a unique model to start working through conflict and healing past relationship ruptures with more grace and ease. Later, we looked at the challenge of codependency and the importance of differentiation and how differentiation is actually a healthy step in any relationship, even though it is often misinterpreted as problematic or threatening. Afterwards, we saw the role that differences among partners can play in CNM, and finally, we examined the phenomenon of the awakening and deconstruction of the self, and how different stages of adult psychological development can impact our growth or stagnation in relationship to CNM. Depending on your particular style of CNM, the amount of time you have been living it, the variety of your experiences, and the nature of your relational challenges, different parts of this book will have been more relevant than others. Although we tried to cover as much ground as we could, representing the most common obstacles and challenges that we see CNM relationships face on a regular basis, inevitably there will be things we missed or perspectives we haven't spoken to. If you have made it this far in the book, my hope is that there have been at least a few things worth being tasted and swallowed. Ideally, there have also been things worth taking the time to digest. Because integration is an ongoing process, the concepts and exercises in this book are meant to be practical tools that you can use whenever you feel you need them. Our intention was to offer a legitimate resource that people struggling with their relationship to CNM could come back to over and over again as a point of reference. Although PolyWise will look different to everyone, in its essence, it is an ideal worth striving for. An affirmation that you can have the kind of relationships you really want if you're willing to do the work to get there. If you want to make it to the top of Mount Everest and revel in the lofty views of its majestic peaks, you don't simply buy a plane ticket for Nepal, grab your warmest winter coat, and set off at your earliest convenience. That would be suicide. It can take literally years of preparation, both physically and psychologically, to reach the point of readiness for such an endeavor. Even after you have successfully made your way to the base of the mountain with all your gear and provisions assembled, you still can't rush your way up to the top in one shot. You have to move in phases. First, setting up base camp and getting used to the new air, then later ascending in slow increments, constantly taking stock of the ever-changing climatic conditions, always stopping to acclimate to new altitudes. Sometimes your journey is slowed or even halted by unpredictable storms or accidents that make the path forward untenable, forcing you against your will to descend to safer grounds until you can start up the mountain again. You have to adapt and be flexible in conditions and situations that are ultimately beyond your control, and above all, you have to know your limits. While I recognize that the transition to CNM is probably not as perilous as an expedition to the top of Mount Everest, there are some useful parallels that can temper one's perspective and encourage a more realistic approach. Like the spectacular views that accompany the journey upward, being non-monogamous can offer new and expansive points of view that were previously unimaginable from where we started. Being polywise is akin to being the seasoned climber who, through years of experience and hard lessons learned along the way, has developed a deep respect for what it actually takes to safely make the trek. They recognize the importance of going slow, acclimating to new heights, paying close attention to the conditions in which they find themselves, and relying on their own self-awareness, intuition, and experiences, as well as the tools they've brought with them. They have a keen sense that how you climb is even more important than how far you climb, and that being present to the adventure every step of the way matters so much more than just making it to the top. Above all, they have a healthy sense of their own limits and are willing to take a step back when necessary. In the same way, being polywise means you are grounded in the self-knowledge that allows you to do what actually works for you, honoring your personal self-limits and desires. It is also the willingness to learn from those who have come before us, considering their mistakes, reflecting on their trials, integrating their hard-won wisdom. To this, we bid you the best of support, love, and skill on your polywise journey. Jessica Fern and David Cooley.